One starts with a marshal, and will then make the marshal relevant, at least, to the celebration of Chanukah. Person walking down the street, minding his own business, someone comes up from behind with an iron pole and breaks both his legs. Now the person is writhing with pain on the sidewalk with both legs broken, and the person with the iron pole comes over him and he says, "Listen, I mean you no harm. I'm just an orthopedic surgeon who needs practice. So I broke your legs and I'm going to heal you for free. I'm going to take you to my clinic, and in 6 months you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened." How much thank you does the person need to give to that orthopedic surgeon for healing him for free, right, and making him walk in 6 months like nothing ever happened? Obviously, nothing. Because if he hadn't broken his legs, he'd be walking like nothing ever happened 6 months earlier, because nothing would have happened. So if somebody breaks your legs and then they heal you, even if they heal you for free and they do a good job, you don't owe them any thank you. And we believe that the Ribono Shel Olam controls this world. Not Yavon and not Paro and not Rome, only the Ribono Shel Olam. That means if the Ribono Shel Olam permitted the Yavonim to make their terrible gzeiros against us, that means that the Ribono Shel Olam broke our legs. And then the Ribono Shel Olam saved us from that. So why do we owe him any thank you? Don't break my legs. Don't heal me. Don't get me into the Tzar of Yavon. Don't take me out of the Tzar of Yavon. Why didn't the Ribono Shel Olam protect us that we shouldn't get into the Tzar rather than get us into the Tzar and get us out of the Tzar? So why are we celebrating Chanukah altogether, or for that matter Purim or Pesach or any other Yeshua was preceded by a Tzar? And if the Ribono Shel Olam could have prevented the Tzar and he didn't, then why should we thank him for the Yeshua? So I didn't come here to convince you not to celebrate Chanukah, so there must be an answer. The answer is very simple. My marshal is not a good marshal. The marshal should be the following. Imagine a disease of the legs, which I made up, but I have the right to make up anything I want for a marshal. That's one of the conditions I made when I was asked to speak. I can make up any marshal I want. So we'll create a disease that doesn't exist. The disease has the following pathology. It lays dormant in a person's legs for 10 years. He doesn't even know he has it. But exactly at the 10-year point, the disease makes the bones of the leg disintegrate. And the person remains a cripple the rest of his life, and there's no cure. There's only one way of curing this disease. If you catch it before the 10 years are up, the way to cure it is to break the bones, reset them, and when they grow back together again, they're cured. Now let's go back to the person walking down the street, minding his own business, but unbeknownst to him, he has this disease. And behind him is working this orthopedic surgeon who's an expert in the disease. And he notices from the way the person is walking that not only does he have the disease, but there's 5 minutes left till the 10 years is up. What does he have to do at that moment? Take an iron pole, break that person's legs. He doesn't have time to start discussing this with him. Make an appointment to come into his clinic. In 5 minutes, there's not going to be any hope. He has to break his legs, and he tells him, "You're a very lucky man." He says, "Could you explain to me why with two legs broken, I'm a very lucky man?" He says, "Yeah. Because had I not broken your legs at that moment, right, in 5 minutes, you would have been a cripple for life, and there would be no hope. I broke your legs. I'm going to heal you, and in 6 months you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened." Now he owes him a thank you, not only for healing him. He owes him a thank you for breaking his legs too, because breaking the legs was part of the healing. Without that, he couldn't be healed. True, the Ribono Shel Olam permits us sometimes to get into tzaras, even bring tzaras on us. But the Ribono Shel Olam knows that the other alternative is much, much worse. We don't know what the other alternative could be. But based on the situation, the tzara that we're in and we don't even know we're in is much worse than the tzara the Ribono Shel Olam permits us to be put in. And that tzara is like breaking your legs. But the breaking of the legs is for the sake of a refuah. Let me put it now into a context. Shari Tshuva says this. Shari Tshuva says that when a person goes through a tzara and he's saved from it, he should not thank the Ribono Shel Olam only for the Yeshua, But he should thank him for the Torah also. Because like we said, if you don't thank the Rabban Shem for the Torah, then there's no purpose to thank him for the Yeshua. Don't break my legs and don't heal me. But if we understand that the Torah also served a purpose, and without that Torah, our condition would be much worse off, then when we get out of the Torah, at least, thank the Rabban Shem not only for the Yeshua, but for the Torah also. And he brings a pasuk. Ilmole lo nofalti lo kamti. If I didn't fall, I wouldn't be able to get up. Ilmole bachoshech yoshavti lo hoya orli. If I didn't sit in the darkness, it wouldn't be light for me. The idea being the following. Sometimes a person's walking along and he doesn't realize he's walking on the edge of a cliff. And he's walking very unsteadily. And if he continues walking like that, he'll fall off the cliff and that'll be it. So what happens is that the Rabban Shem makes him fall down. He falls down, and now he has to concentrate on getting up. Now he gets up and walks much more steadily. And now he doesn't fall off the cliff. If I hadn't fallen down, I wouldn't have been able to get up in a way that now my walking is much more guided and much more sturdy. I would have fallen off the cliff. Sometimes a person doesn't appreciate the good that he has. And he's in the light, and he doesn't appreciate it. So what does the Rabban Shem do? He pushes him into darkness for a while. And once you're in the darkness and you come back into the light, then you appreciate the light that you had. So sometimes a person needs to be set on a straight path, and therefore he has to fall down. And then when he gets up again, he gets up in a much more sturdy way. And sometimes a person, to appreciate what he has, it has to be threatened to be taken away from him, as they put in the darkness, to appreciate what really a person person has. That's why I think the word nes always, most of the time, represents something where there was a tzara, and then there was a miraculous Yeshua, and that's a nes. Nes is made of two letters, nun and samach. Nun is the letter that represents nefila, falling. Naflo v'lo sosif kum, that's why David HaMelech didn't put a nun in Ashrei, because it represents falling. Didn't want to put a pasuk of nefila, and therefore he put, instead of that, somech Hashem l'chol hanofel. So nun is the falling. Samech is somech Hashem, is smicha, is supporting. The nes has both parts to it. You have to recognize the nefila, the falling, and the smicha, and the support. And that's why the Sfas Emes says that on every nes, we give two kinds of shevach to the Rabban Shlom, Hallel and Hodah. Hallel is for the Yeshua, and Hodah is an admission that I needed the Tzara to. Not only am I thanking the Rabban Shlom for the Yeshua, I'm thanking him for the Tzara also. I needed that Tzara. For some reason, had I not had that Tzara, the result would have been much, much worse. So, if that's the case, in order to understand and to really celebrate Hanukkah properly, we can't just appreciate what the Hatzalah was, what the Yeshua was. We have to understand why Klal Yisrael needed the Tzara. Why did they need to be beset with the Tzaras of Yavan specifically and all the Gzeiris? What were they missing that they needed their legs broken for a while before the Rabban Shem healed them? What was missing at that time? And if we learn that, we'll be able to celebrate Hanukkah a lot more meaningfully, because we'll know what we're supposed to correct through the nes of Hanukkah, what it came to correct and to strengthen. The Bach in the Tur says that the weakness of that generation was that they were nichsholim, chaloshim in avodas Hashem. Misrashli, Avodas Hashem. They didn't approach the Avoda of the Rabban Shem properly. Now, simply Avoda means the Korbanos, the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, but there's a much deeper idea of what Avoda is. Avoda is also, is always connected to Ratzon. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu B'Amcha Yisrael V'Stilasam, which is Avoda. U'Sehila Ratzon Tamid Avodas Yisrael Amecha. Or by a korban it says Nachas Ruach Lefonai She Omarti V'Nasa Ritzoni. This concept of Ratzon is attached and connected very much to the concept of avoda. What does that mean? I were to ask you, how many things does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us? Approximately, things to do, things not to do. So probably you tell me 613, but that's only the Rosh HaPrakim. There's branches and sub-branches and sub-sub-branches. The answer, Lechora, is a heck of a lot of things. Every time we turn around, the Rebbe wants something else. Do this, don't do that. Eat this, don't eat that. Work now, don't work now, and so on, and so on, and so on. The truth is not like that. Torah says clearly, Mo Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach, Ki Im Liyiras Hashem Elokecha. The Rebbe Shalom doesn't want a lot of things. Because the Rebbe Shalom is one, and the Rambam says many times, Hu Echad, or Ritzon No Echad. The Rebbe Shalom is one, and his Ratzon is one. The Rebbe Shalom doesn't have a lot of Ritzonos. He's the one, ultimate, absolute one. So everything about the Rebbe Shalom is one. So the Rebbe Shalom can't want a lot of things. So what is it that he wants? He wants one thing. That one thing is that we should be Yirei Shamayim. In a nutshell, what does that mean, that we should be Yirei Shamayim? That every second of our life, in everything that we're doing, in everything that we think, speak, do, we reflect the fact that we are created beings, created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to act accordingly. Act like a Tzelem Elokim. That's all. That every single thing we think, speak, and do, every second of our life, is done in a way that reflects the fact that we're Tzelem Elokim. That's all the Rebbe Shalom wants from us. Except that it's so all-encompassing. It so includes everything that's impossible for us to relate to it. So the Rebbe Shalom broke down his one ratzon into many, many different things that we can relate to. And that's what it says, Ach as diber Elokim, shnayim zu shamanu. The Rebbe Shalom said one thing at Har Sinai, one all-encompassing thing, that Yira Shamayim. But shnayim zu shamanu, we couldn't relate to it as one gigantic thing. We have to relate to it piecemeal. This time do this, this time do that, and so on. But it's not really that the Rebbe Shalom wants a lot of things. He only wants one all-encompassing thing. We'll see in 1 second the difference between it. That could be the reason why when the Rebbe Shalom gave the Torah, he gave all the Aseres HaDibros B'dibor Echad, Ma She'ein HaPeh Yochol Ladaber Ve'ein HaOzen Yochol Lishmoa, something that a human being can't say or hear. So then why do you do it? If we couldn't hear it, what was the purpose of giving it all at once and then repeating it so we could hear it? The Rebbe Shalom wanted to show us he could do things we can't do, that we can't hear. What was the purpose? The purpose was to show us that this is not a bunch of different things. It's all one thing, but you can't hear it as one thing. You need to have it broken down into its components. That's what the Rebbe Shalom wanted to tell us. And therefore the Navi complains when Klal Yisrael approach the Torah in a piecemeal way and think that that's all the Torah is, a bunch of things to do. Do this, don't do that. The Navi complains, Tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, ze'er sham, ze'er sham. Keep the mitzvah, a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there, a little bit here, a little bit there, but that's how we keep the Torah. We don't eat matzah in a sukkah, wave esrog and lulav, and blow shofar all at once. Some days you have this mitzvah, some days that mitzvah. So what's the problem? A tzav l'tzav. The answer is that Klal Yisrael, instead of approaching ratzon Hashem, what does God really want from me? He wants me to live a life in every aspect of my life. My standards, my values, everything should be Ratzon Hashem. Except I can't deal with that unless I see specific things. But when I lose sight of that inner Ratzon Hashem, and all I see it as external things, so I do a bunch of mitzvahs, but my standards, my values, my way of life is not what the Rebbe Shalom wants. But I'm doing a lot of things. I'm doing what the Rebbe Shalom says, but I'm not really doing what he wants. There's a difference between Shmiya Likol Hashem and Shmiya Bikol Hashem. Sometimes in the Torah it says Vishamata Likolo, and sometimes it says Vishamata Bikolo. Both are important. Likolo means do the mitzvahs, because if you don't do the mitzvahs, you'll never do Ratzon Hashem. But once you do the mitzvah, there's more to it than just the mitzvah itself. What does that mean? The way I like to explain it is the following. Imagine if you have this gigantic light bulb that is so bright and so big that you can't look at it. It's impossible, blinding. Can't look at it. So you take the light bulb and you encase it in a globe, and in the globe you cut 613 little windows. Through each window you can see one small portion of the light bulb, which is seeable. But there's only one light bulb. The 613 windows are only windows to see different aspects, different portions of that light bulb. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? If you look through all 613 windows, one after the other, you'll get a composite picture of the light bulb. The light bulb is that one all-encompassing Ratzon Hashem that applies to every aspect of life. Your values, your standards, your goals, your character, your personality, your way of life. That's the Ratzon Hashem. But we can't relate to it directly. So we need to relate to it through windows. Each mitzvah reveals to us another aspect of that Ratzon Hashem. And therefore, it's not just doing the mitzvah that's important. That starts it off. But once you do the mitzvah, it's a window that you open to be able to see from that mitzvah what is the Ratzon Hashem that hides behind that mitzvah that tells me how to apply what I did that mitzvah to the rest of my life. Not just for the time I'm doing that mitzvah. Take Shabbos as an example, then I'll give you an example with a story. Shabbos is a very narrow mitzvah. It's a little window. It's one day a week. Specific things you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. But what's the Ratzon Hashem? If you look through that window, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from me for keeping Shabbos? One of the ideas is he wants me to understand that the physical world is very important, but it's not the end. It's a means. And the 6 days you work lead up towards Shabbos, towards something spiritual. So somebody who keeps Shabbos meticulously, he shomea likol Hashem. But the rest of the week he has one goal in life, earn some more money. So he missed the Ratzon Hashem from Shabbos. He didn't look into the window. He's not shomea bikol Hashem. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want that I should apply this to all my life? Because Shabbos is a window to that Ratzon Hashem that applies to my entire life. A story will bring it out even better. When I was in day school in Miami, so the principal of the day school was Rabbi Alexander Gross, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was a Talmud Muvak of Rav Shaga Feigel Mendelovich. In fact, he sent him, he started Torah Mesorah, and one of the first day schools outside of New York that Torah Mesorah started was in Miami. So Rabbi Gross told me this story from his Rebbe. He said that Rav Shaga Feigel told him that he once was invited to eat Friday night by a gvir who wanted the covet of this Rosh Hashiva eating in his home. And the men came home from shul, and the balabos knocked on his door, opened the door, looked inside, and turned white, was ready to faint. Shaga Feigel said, I realized something was not right on the other side of that door that made this guy turn white. So I was curious, I looked inside. And right away I surmised what the problem was, and as things progressed, this is what the problem was. I saw the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. So he said, I surmised what happened was the following. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos, and while the men were in shul, she said to herself, I think I'll lie down for a few minutes, and I'll get up in plenty of time to put the house in order and set the table before the men come home from shul. And she fell into a deep sleep, and she woke up when they knocked on the door. So the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and she was hovering somewhere between this world and some other world. So Shaga Feigel said, I assume that this man now was extremely embarrassed that I'm going to walk into this house, right, and see all of this. But as things progressed, I saw that doesn't bother him. Because he assumed that I understood this was not his fault. He wasn't sure. This is his wife's fault. So he wasn't embarrassed about that. What bothered him? On the table were the two challahs without a challah cover. And the man was concerned that I would think that he was an Amoritz and didn't know you have to cover the challahs. So in order to make it clear whose fault that was, he starts yelling at his wife. You are lazy, incompetent, don't you know you're supposed to cover the challahs? Where's the challah cover? Now it's clear that he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs, and this is also his wife's fault. Shaga Feigel said, at that moment I thought to myself, this is the most absurd thing I ever saw in my life. Why? One of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make Kiddush is because the bracha on bread is more important than the bracha on wine. And normally you'd make a bracha on bread before wine, but Shabbos you have to make kiddush first. So shelo yira hapas boshto, in order that you shouldn't insult and embarrass the bread, we cover it. Now I don't know, maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs, but I never came home from shul, said something not nice to my challahs, and they ran off, closed themselves in their room, and I had to appease them and get them out. It happened a few times with my daughters, never with my challahs, never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if any of you have seen one, I'm sure there's somebody professional who could help you. What does that mean, an embarrassed challah? So what's the simplest idea, besides the deep Kabbalistic ideas, what's the simplest idea in this minute? That if you condition yourself not to insult an inanimate object, you'll never insult a human being. Says Rav Shaga Feivel, and here's a man embarrassing his wife publicly in order to defend the honor of a piece of bread? Absurd. Shmia likol Hashem, 100%. Shmia bikol Hashem, 0. So there's more to Torah than just doing a bunch of things. You have to also understand, what's the Rebbe trying to tell me with what he's giving me? And how do I apply that to my life? My standards, my values, my goals, my way of life. That's called Avodas Hashem. Mitzvahs are mitzvahs. But Avodas Hashem relates to Ratzon Hashem. What's God's will? Not only is what His command is. Not just listening, Likol Hashem. How do you listen into that call? Lishmoa Bikol Hashem. To understand what the inner value of Torah is. The lifestyle of Torah. Not just a bunch of things that you do. It's possible. And there are unfortunately people like that, whose basic lifestyle is a secular lifestyle. They live just like the goyim, but they do it kosher. They keep mitzvahs, right? But their values, their standards, their way of life is basically no different than the rest of the world, except they do it kosher. That's not what the Rebbe Shlomo wants. He doesn't want kosher goyim. He wants kosher yidden. He wants from all those mitzvahs that we should create a lifestyle with values and standards that's different than the nations of the world. But that was the weakness of the people in the time of Hanukkah time. They were nisrashel ba'avodas Hashem. Mitzvahs they did. But they didn't realize that inner beauty of what Torah is, a Torah way of life, Torah values and Torah standards. It was just an external thing. A bunch of things to do. Memela. What was the power of Yavan? There's a difference between what it says by Hanukkah and what it says by Purim. You would think that the Alanisim of Hanukkah and Purim should be symmetrical. So they are, except for one word. The Alanisim of Hanukkah starts Bimei Matisyob and Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai Uvanav, similar to the Alanisim of Purim Bimei Mordechai VeEsther B'Shushan Habira. Introduce the era and the tzaddikim of the era. Okay? Next. Kishomar Aleihem Haman Harasha, parallel to Kishom the Malchus Yovan Harashal, Amcha Yisrael. Okay, so now we know who the good guys are, we know who the bad guys are. Now, what did the bad guys want to do that made the Tzara? Bikesh Lahashmid Laharu Gulabi. Now it tells us what the Tzara was. By Hanukkah, it should say, Bikshu Lahashmicham Tarasecha. It doesn't say that. Just says lehashkicham torasecha. Why does it say bikshu lehashkicham torasecha? So I think the answer is Haman was only a threat from the time that he wanted to do something against us. Till Haman made his gzera, he wasn't a threat to us. The threat was what he was mevakish. But Yavan kishaam the malchus Yavan harishol amcha Yisrael. That in itself was lehashkicham torasecha. They didn't have to want to do anything. The proof is, before they made any gzeiros, no gzeiros, there were already Jews that were affected by Malchus Yavan and became the Siavni, and they became Hellenists. So it wasn't the gzeiros of Yavan that were the danger, it was Yavan itself that was a danger. Haman and his gzeiros were a danger. He wasn't a danger to us until he decided to do something. But Yavan just being a power in the world that could have influence on Klal Yisrael, that was the danger. Why? What does Yavan represent? Yavan represented the externals of the world. Total external view of the world. There's nothing internal. Everything is just external. External beauty and external might. External wisdom. Nothing beyond what a person can come to with his own intellect. And that was Yavin. I think the word Yavin itself represents that. Yavin is three letters. Yud, Vav, and Nun. None of those letters have an inside. They're just lines. They're external lines. Yud, Vav, and Nun. There's no inside to them. Not only that, when you look at the world externally, physically, without something spiritual, you look at it in a very, in a way that is, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it now. You look at it in size, in what's it called? How much there is of the thing? Okay, no. Quantity. When you look at things spiritually, you see them in quality. Spiritual things are measured in quality, and physical things are measured in quantity. What are the generic quantities in the physical world? Small, medium, large. That's Yavan. Small yud, medium-sized vav, large nun. Nothing with an inside, just lines, external lines. And not only that, but those lines are parallel. Parallel lines never meet. There's no connection, there's no achdus. Everything is just separate. When you look at things physically, they're separate things. Spirituality unites them together into something that's one. So that's Yavan. Yavan is a total external view of the world. And if Yidden would have had an internal view of Torah, they wouldn't have been influenced by Yavan. Because the internal beauty of a Torah life is far, far superior to all the externals that Yavan can present. Somebody who appreciates what Torah really is, what the beauty of Torah is, internally, is not affected by the externals of Yavan. But somebody whose whole approach to Yiddishkeit is external. All he sees is the externals of Yiddishkeit. And the truth is, the externals of Yiddishkeit can't raise a candle, with, excuse the pun, to the externals of Yavan. It's much more impressive. What they have is bigger, stronger, more numerous, looks better. So the problem with the Yidden at the time was they didn't appreciate the inner value of Torah. All they saw was the outer value. So they were affected by the outer externals of Yavan. And those are the people that fell prey to the externals of Yavan. That's why Yavan basically opposed our Shita. We held there's something internal in the world. There's something spiritual in the world. It's not just the externals of the world. And they attacked that. How so? They made gzeiros against three things that are most mefursim and two other things that the Rambam brings down, which is based on Midrash. They made gzeiros against Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Bris Milah. Why? Because those things represent the internal workings of the world from three standpoints. Shabbos is the neshama of the physical world. The world was created in 6 days. That's all the external world. But there's a neshama to this world, which is really the neshama is called Olam Haba. And the Olam Haba already exists in this world. You just have to uncover it. So they went against Shabbos, because Shabbos is the neshama of the world. And they went against Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is the neshama of time. Time is also an external entity. But there's a neshama to time. That's Kedushas Hazman. That's what we're Mekadosh HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh is putting Kedusha into time, giving time a neshama. And Bris Milah is the representation that there's a neshama to a body. The body is not just an external physical thing, but there's a neshama, there's kedusha in the body. So the Yavanim wanted to stamp out any inner value to the body, to the world, and to time. There's two other things that they were gozer against. The Rambam says, Upashtu yadam bimamonam ubibnosam. They also make zeirus against Jewish money, Jewish property. The Midrashim say that they made every Jew inscribe on anything he owned. Ein lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. And women. They wanted to be metame, taharas Yisrael, taharas ha-mishpacha. They were metame, and they were mechala le-kedusha of kedusha with their gzeiris. They were metame u-mechala. In fact, that was the hallmark of Yavan. Tumah and chilu. What is tumah? What's chilutar chilu? What's mechalel? The word halal means a vacuum, an empty space. A dead body is a halal because there's no neshama. It's just a facade. There's nothing inside. A chalil is a flute, because it's hollow on the inside. In fact, I'm sure the word hollow in English comes from the word halal. It's exactly the word. That's why there's two L's in hollow, because it comes from the word halal, which means a vacuum, empty. So halal ha-shamayim, empty space, is called a halal. The Yevonim wanted to be machalal. They didn't want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't try to destroy it. They wanted to be machalal the Beis HaMikdash. They wanted to take out that inner kedusha and just leave the outer facade. And tumah is the same thing. Wherever there was kedusha, and the kedusha left, and there's a vacuum, that vacuum is either filled with tumah or that vacuum is tumah. So tumah and chilul are the same thing. It means you take the inner essence out, and all you leave is a vacuum. All you leave is an empty facade. The outside with nothing on the inside. And therefore money, in the eyes of the nations of the world, money is basically an external thing. How much enjoyment you get from it, what you can use it for, what you can... But from a Torah standpoint, tzadikim chavivim aleihem amonim yosef migufan. A tzaddik values his money more than his body. Because a tzaddik understands that his money is a kli l'avodas Hashem. The Moshe Feinstein zatzal said in this coming week's Sedra, says that Yaakov gives Esav a present, and Esav says, keep your present, yesh li rav, I have more than I need. I'm a rich man, I don't need your present. And Yaakov says, no, you keep it, ki yesh li kol, I have everything. So Moshe asked, wouldn't it have been better? Yaakov was a rich man. He only had everything? He didn't have more than he needed? He wouldn't have been happy with anything less? Only Esav says he has more than he needs? Yaakov Lechore had a lot more than he needs. He could have been poorer than that. He says, no. A Rasha, money is what you can use to spend it on. So if you have a lot, so you have more than you need. I could get along with less than that. The concept of more exists by a Rasha. By a tzaddik, money is a keli l'avodas Hashem. It's everything is given to you by the Rabban Hashem. This is what I need to use in this world. And there's no such thing as more. Right? It's like a play. In a play, everybody has a different part to play. So the queen, she has one gown and a scepter. That's her prop. The late son, the court jester, has five costumes and 10 props. You can tell me that the court jester has more props than he needs? No, he needs exactly what he needs to be the court jester. And the queen has exactly what she needs to be the queen. Everybody gets exactly what they need to fulfill their purpose in this world. And therefore there's no concept by a tzaddik of more than enough. I have exactly what I need. The Rabban Hashem gave me exactly what I need. And part of that is to give to you this matana. That's the top gift of this part of my wealth. It's a kli l'avodas Hashem. Manela, a tzaddik looks at his body as a kli l'avodas Hashem and his money, his material possessions. So, which is more chaviv? Which is more precious? We have a rule. What you put more work into is more precious to you. What you put less work into is less precious. How much work do you have to put into getting your body? None. It's a birthday present. Baruch Hashem gave you first birthday, a body, enjoy it. You have to put work into using your body and maintaining your body. How about money? Tzaddikim don't steal. So they have to put a lot of work into getting their money. And then into maintaining it and using it. Money involves three kinds of effort. And the body only two. So which is more chaviv? Which is more precious? The money is more precious than the body. Because there's more effort involved in the body than is in the more effort involved in the money than involved in the body. So the Yevonim wanted to take out that inner value of money and just leave it with the externals. They knew the Jewish money, and therefore everything I own, they wanted me to put on it. Ein lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. This has nothing to do with Ribono Shel Olam. It's nothing to do with kedusha. It's just a piece of metal or a piece of plastic, and that's it. And women also. Women are the inner kedusha of Klal Yisrael. Throughout history, it's been like that. Hakol toli ba'isha. The women were the first ones approached by Matan Torah, and so on, and so on, and so on. And yet, in the eyes of the nations of the world, women are totally external objects. So the Yevonim wanted to take away that inner kedusha that a Jewish woman has, that Jewish marriage has, and make it a cholol, mimachalolit, mimatamiyit, and make it something only external. So those were the gzeiros of Yovan. And the Chashmonaim, dafka were the Kohanim. not the people who represented the externals, the Malachim, not Yehuda, who represented the externals of the world, might and power of Klal Yisrael, but the inner Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. That's what Kahuna is. They were the ones who vanquished the Yevonim. And that was the import of the mitzvah, of the Neis. We were weak in these things. We didn't realize how important the inner values of Yiddishkeit were. And the Chafetz Chaim says, when a person doesn't appreciate what he has, the best way to make him appreciate it is to threaten to take it away, or to actually take it away. Unfortunately, people appreciate the things that they have when they don't have them anymore. People appreciate their parents the most after they're not here anymore. That's a fact of life, unfortunately. So, the Chafetz Chaim says, therefore, sometimes the Rebbe Nachum threatens to have these things taken away. He takes them away from us, in order that when we get them back, we should appreciate them. Or we should appreciate what we didn't have, because when we'll have it, we'll appreciate it more. The Mela, the Rebbe Nachum, let the Yevonim be successful in their gzeiros. He could have stopped them. But had he not stopped them, we were on a course to fall off a mountain. We ourselves didn't appreciate what Yiddishkeit was, and eventually would have given it up completely. A good portion of Klal Yisrael. Look what happened to the Mishyavnim. And more Yidden were following that path. So the Rebbe Nachum broke our legs, and he permitted the Yevonim to make their gzeiros. And once we had a fight for these things, for Bris Milah and for Chodesh and for Shabbos, then we began to appreciate them. And that power, intense power of the people who appreciated and fought for it, influenced the rest of Yidden too. So the Rebbe Nachum had to break our legs so he could heal us. What was the Neis? The Neis was exactly this point. It says in the Alanisim of Hanukkah, the word Godel is mentioned at least four times, maybe five. Let's see. Right? It says, Kohen Godel, Chashmonoi Yevonov, Kshom the Malchus HaYevonov, Sharashol, Amcha Yisrael, Hashim, Yatov Rechamecha, Amadav, Yisrael, Asim, Raptus Rivam, right? V'alucho Asisa, Shein Godel, the Kadosh Bolamecha, V'amcha Yisrael, Asisa, Teshua Gedola, and in the end, L'hodo Sulahale, L'shimcha HaGodol. Four times it says the word Godel in the Alanisim of Hanukkah. And yet in the Alanisim of Purim, it doesn't mention the word Godel at all. Why four times Godel? Because that's exactly what the Neis of Hanukkah is to tell us. What is Godel? In the eyes of the nations of the world, Godel is quantity. How much, how big, how strong. But that's not really what a Godel is. Godel is how much of quality there is. How much Kedusha there is. That's what makes something Godel. Quality, not quantity. How do I know that? Kohen Godel. Right? What do? They weighed all the Kohanim, and the fattest, tallest Kohen was the Kohen Godel. Avadina had nothing to do with quantity. It was the Kohen who had the most Kedusha. He was the Kohen Godel. So Gedula has to do with quality, not with quantity. That was the Neis. And how do I know that? Because it says, Rabin biad matim, giborim biad chaloshim, right? Tmeim biad tahorim, rishoyim biad tzadikim, zeidim biad oski sorosecha. So all the mafarshim ask, I understand it's a neis when the rabim are vanquished by the matim, and the giborim are vanquished by the chaloshim. But what's the neis that the tmeim were vanquished by the tahorim? Is there some kind of unwritten law in nature that the people who are tar always lose, and if they win, it's a neis? Right, the tzaddikim always lose, but if they win, it's a nace. What's the nace there? I think the answer is very simple. We won, even though we were few and we were weak. But we didn't win because we were few and weak, despite the fact that. So why did we win? The answer is, the Yevonim had an edge on us. They were many and they were strong. We had an edge on them, because we were tahar, and we were tzaddikim, and we were oskei sorasecha. They had the external edge, and we had the internal edge. They don't have to be in conflict, but when they are, which one is more significant? The internal over the external. That's the nace of Hanukkah. You don't have to have a lot of oil, but if it's tahar, it'll last a long time. If it's not tahar, it's worthless. It's not the quantity. It's not how much. It's how pure. It's what's inside that really counts. And that's why every Hanukkah has in it all the things that the Yevonim wanted to take away were nischazik by Hanukkah. Every Hanukkah has 8 days keneged Bris Milah. Every Hanukkah has at least one Shabbos. And every Hanukkah has Rosh Chodesh. And every Chanukah geld is a part of Chanukah, money. And women have a special part in the nace of Chanukah because Chanukah brought back the importance of these things to us because we lost their importance and we needed to have them threatened to be taken away to be able to appreciate what they really were. Thinking that it's exactly what it says in the Navi, in Zechariah. The message of the menorah is this message. Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach kim baruchi omar Hashem. It's not numbers and it's not physical strength. It's what's inside. It's the kedusha, it's the tahara. That's what makes all the difference in this world. That's the ratzon Hashem. Don't look at the things only externally. See more internally what is there. Just to end this part, there are three parts I want to speak about. I finished two of them and get to the third one in a second. I was thinking that, you know, in Chutz La'aretz, I assume that most of you are from Chutz La'aretz, otherwise you wouldn't be understanding me. In Chutz La'aretz, the machol of Chanukah was latkes. That was one of the hardest things. I came to Israel 26 years ago, and the first Chanukah here, I didn't see a latke anywhere. No latkes. And once I passed by an army base on Chanukah, and there was a gigantic sign which says latkes with an arrow. I said, wow, at least in the army, lots are called. Now they eat latkes, but they publicize it. Then somebody told me it says latkes. In any case, so here, what is the Michael, huh?
What does latkes mean?
Latkes means to the ceremony. So here, what's the Michael of Chanukah? Sufganiyot, jelly donuts. I understand latkes have to do with the oil. Okay, maybe jelly donuts also have to do with the fact that you make them in oil. I think it is a deeper reason why jelly donuts are the Michael of Chanukah in Eretz Yisrael. Because that's exactly the message of a jelly donut. It's not the ikkar what's on the outside. The ikkar is what's on the inside. That is the lesson of Chanukah. In any case, so we now appreciate a little bit what the Tzorah was, that Yidden saw Torah in a very external way, and they needed to have their legs broken to be able to appreciate the internal values of Torah, and that way not be influenced anymore by Yavan, and that's what every year we recharge our batteries. If we have the right approach to Torah, we won't be affected by the Yavan of today. All the chitzonius of the world, because we have something much more valuable, much more beautiful, that you have to appreciate. If you don't appreciate and you only look at the externals of Torah, then it can't compete with what Yavan has. But in order to really appreciate a Torah, the Shari Tshuva says that most people can fulfill that once you're out of the Torah, you look back and you give thanks also for the Torah, not only for the Yeshua. But very, very few people, in fact, Kemat, nobody is able to appreciate the Tzorah in the Tzorah and give thanks to the Rabbanu Shalom while he's in the Tzorah. First you have to be out of the Tzorah, and then you can appreciate that you had your legs broken and now healed. But while you're healing and you don't have your legs healed yet, very hard to give thanks to the Rabbanu Shalom for the Tzorah that you're feeling. But that also is possible with this idea in the following way. That is that we have to realize, let me start with the Gemara. Gemara says in Avodah Zorah, Lasid Lava, HaKadosh Baruch was going to take a Sefer Torah, put it in his arms, figuratively speaking, and say, whoever kept what it says here, come and get the Schar. Immediately all the nations of the world are going to gather, and God's going to divide them up into nations, and the Romans are going to come in. God's going to say to them, well, what do you want Schar for? And they're going to say, well, we built a lot of shopping centers, and we made a lot of bathhouses, and we amassed a tremendous amount of money, and everything we did it Klai Yisrael should learn Torah. The Rosh Hashanah is going to say, Shotim Shibolim, you're a bunch of fools. You built your shopping centers for immoral purposes, you built your bathhouses for your own pleasure, and Liyah Kesef, Liyah Zav, the money's my doing. And therefore, out. You're fools. So Brisker Rav asks, first of all, how did the Goyim have such a chutzpah to say such an outrageous lie face to face to the Rabbanu Shalom that they did everything for the sake of Klal Yisrael? So that's a lie. And if they're lying already, call them liars. Shakronim, not Shotim. Something similar to the Brisker Rav's Torah. It's not exactly what he says, but for our purposes, I want to change a little bit. Chovas HaLevava says that even though we have free choice, our free choice ends with the choice. And whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets us fulfill our choice or not is up to him. Which seems to be pretty simple. We don't control the world. The Rabban Hashem controls the world. So we can make a choice, but if we actually are successful in bringing out that choice, good or bad, is up to the Rabban Hashem. Person can decide he wants to murder somebody. Okay? Makes up his mind, he decides he's going to do it. He's not in control. The person he wants to murder may die before he murders him. Then he can't murder him. The person who wanted to do the murder may die before he can do the murder. He can't control that. The gun may misfire. The person may have his lucky coin there, and the bullet will hit the lucky coin. There's a million things that could happen that are not in the control of the person who made the decision. All he can do is make the decision, and basically a person is rewarded and punished, says the Chovas HaLevavos, for the decisions you make. As long as the Rabban Hashem knows that you really meant it and you weren't going to change your mind. When the Rabban Hashem ascertains that, then you get punished for the decision. Whether the Rabban Hashem permits you to carry out the decision is up to him. Sometimes he'll let you murder that person, sometimes not. And if the Rabban Hashem wants that person murdered, then he'll let you murder him. And if he doesn't want him murdered, he won't let you murder him. And in the end, everything that happens in this world is Ratzon Hashem. There's nothing that's not Ratzon Hashem. Same thing goes with mitzvahs. A person may decide he wants to give tzedakah. He makes up his mind, he's sure he's going to do it. And the next morning, the person he wanted to give tzedakah to may have won the lottery. He's not on the anymore. He can't give him tzedakah. Or he may have died. Or the banks may go under. Right? A million things could happen that you're not in control of. So you could make the decision you want to give tzedakah and you may not be able to do it. Sometimes the Rabban Hashem will let you give the tzedakah and sometimes not. Megalgulin schus al yidei zakayu, megalgulin chov al yidei chayu. So Memela, what happens in this world, no matter what it is, ultimately is Ratzon Hashem. We don't control what happens. We only control what we decide to do. We can only make our hishtadlus. We can only make our decisions. But what actually happens is up to the Rabban Hashem. Memela, the Rabban Hashem has a plan, and he only lets things happen in this world if they fit his plan. And therefore, what is his plan? His plan is that the world should reach its completion, Mashiach should come. What's the purpose of Mashiach? That Klal Yisrael should be able to learn and observe the Torah in the most optimum way. That's in a nutshell. So when the Goyim will come at the end of time and look back, what are they going to see? That every single thing they did, somehow the Rabban Hashem made it work towards this goal, which is that Klal Yisrael should learn Torah. So they're not liars. They're saying 100% the truth. Every single thing we did somehow worked out that Klal Yisrael should learn Torah. So we want reward. The Rabban Hashem says, you're not liars, but you're fools. If you think you're going to get rewarded for what I made happen, you don't get reward for what happened. That's my doing. You get reward for your intention, for your bechira, and you chose it for bad reasons. You did it for your own enjoyment. You did it for immoral purposes. It worked out that the monies or whatever helped to oil the wheels of progress and make Mashiach come. That's liya kesef or liya zav. That's my doing. That's not your doing. Comes out that if you look at the world in a totally external way, so then you see all these terrible tzoros that happen. And they're not understandable, bichlal, and there's no way of explaining it. But if you understand that there's more to the world than just the external view, there's something behind all of this. There's a Ratzon Hashem. That Ratzon Hashem is also what happens in the world only happens because the Rabban Hashem knows that this is somehow going to reach towards that goal, even though it doesn't seem like that now. It seems destructive now. But the Rabban Hashem permits it to happen, even though the people who perpetrate will get punished. And they'll suffer in Gehenna for it, because they made a bad decision. But the Rabban Hashem sometimes uses those bad decisions for his purposes. And only the way he knows. No way we can understand. An example, I mentioned Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, mentioned again. The Gemara says on the Pasuk by Chana, Ein tzur kelokeinu. There's no rock like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says, don't read rock, el tzayar, an artist. There's no artist like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, one way of understanding could be the following. The Gemara says a different way. It says maybe another way of understanding the fact that God is the ultimate artist could be the following. Take a kindergarten child and tell him to paint the picture of a the person standing in front of him. So what does he do? He draws a circle, that's the face. Draws a line down, that's the body. Two lines out, arms. Two lines down, legs. Two dots, eyes. Dot, nose, smile, finished. You know exactly what he's painting every step along the way. Now go tell Rembrandt, paint the picture of this person. So Rembrandt goes up to the easel, right? And on the canvas, he smears some red paint. Then he smears some black paint. So somebody who knows nothing about art will go over to Rembrandt and say, "Listen, Rembrandt, I think you ruined this canvas. Red, black. I'll get you another one. Start with the circle and let's get finished." You know what Rembrandt will tell him? "This painting's going to take me 6 months. Have patience. Don't ask me any questions. When you see the whole painting, if you have any questions, please ask. What's going to happen when the painting's finished? The red was needed for contrast. And the black was needed for a shadow. And everything fits perfectly into the picture. But there's no way of seeing that until you see the whole picture. You have to be able to see the whole picture." So, if you don't understand, there's a whole picture. There's a Ratzon Hashem. There's not just piecemeal a bunch of things in this world. But you're able to see the inner Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That doesn't only apply to the Ratzon Hashem that's in the Torah, but the Ratzon Hashem that's in the Bria. And there's a grander plan that the Ribbono Shel Olam has. And what appears to be destructive, if you don't see the whole picture, in the whole picture may be very constructive. May be that that's just what the person needed for the sake of their neshama, not necessarily in this world, but lenetzach netzachin. There's so much more than just what goes on in the 120 years in this world. There's a netzach netzachin. Who knows whose neshama needed to leave this world during the Holocaust exactly the way that it did? Because that's what that neshama needed, lenetzach netzachin, even though in the short term it seemed terribly tragic or whatever. And we have to see this tragic. We have to cry about it. But on the other hand, to have a certain amount of emunah that if the Ribbono Shel Olam breaks somebody's legs, there's a purpose for it. And ultimately, it's part of the refuah. And it's not maybe the refuah in this world, maybe it's a refuah lenetzach netzachin. The Knaf Renonim, a perush on the Perek Shira, gives a marshal. He says, there was once a city slicker that came to the farm. Never saw a farm before. And he sees the farmer holding what he thinks is cereal in his hand. And he thinks he's going to eat breakfast. Except these crude farmers don't know how to put things in boxes or into bowls. So he's holding the cereal in his hand. He's going to eat breakfast. He sees the farmer goes to a muddy part of his field and starts throwing the cereal into the mud and stepping on the mud to cover the cereal. He says, "Look, I hate to tell you anything, but we people in the city eat that cereal. Now, we don't throw it into the mud. What are you doing?" He says, "I see you never on a farm." He said, "Why don't you come back here in 6 months and meet me on this spot?" 6 months later, he comes back and he sees that where the farmer threw the cereal in the ground, there's 100 times as much cereal growing from that place. He says, "Wow, this guy's not so stupid. Right? Now he's going to go and he's going to eat the cereal. Now he's had a big breakfast." He sees he starts cutting down the cereal and then he starts beating the cereal. He says, "What did the cereal do to you? Did you have to beat it?" "Nope." He says, he sees he beats it, what's it called? Then he starts grinding it. "So what are you taking out your frustrations on this cereal?" And then he says, "Well, maybe he likes to eat the powder." "No, he mixes the powder with water and becomes this disgusting looking paste." He says, "That's surely not as palatable as the cereal we eat in the city, but maybe farmers like to eat this paste." Then he sees he takes the paste and puts it in a fire, in an oven, starts to burn it. "Why are you taking out your frustrations on this poor dough?" And then he sees the bread. Once you see the bread, you understand that all the things that went before are not destructive, but they're part of a plan, part of a process that leads to that bread. But if you don't see the whole process, it's very difficult to see. The Chafetz Chaim is a very cute word. He said, if you don't see the whole picture, you can distort things tremendously and see good as bad and bad as good, and see you have tremendous questions on the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if a person knows the pasuk, Shomer Hashem Eskolo Avod, the Eskol HaRishoyim Yashmi. Any problem with that pasuk? Hashkafically? Perfect. Kodesh Baruch Hu Shomer O Avod, and he's Mashmid Rishoyim. Perfect. What if you never heard that pasuk in your life? And you walked into Shul once late. And what do you hear? Eskolo Avod, the Eskol HaRishoyim Yashmi. What kind of ridiculous thing is this? The Ribbono Shel Olam going to destroy all the people he loves and the ones that are Rishoyim? Why would he want to do that? Or you're in shul, never heard this pasuk before, and you leave early. What do you hear? Shomer Hashem is kolo avov, is kolo rishoyim. That's not fair. Why would the Ribbono Shel Olam want to be shomer the rishoyim too? So if you come late or you leave early, you get a very distorted picture of what's really going on. Says the Chafetz Chaim, we come into this world late and we leave early and we have a lot of kashas. But if we had come on time and we'd leave on time, we'd see the whole picture, the kashas wouldn't be there, because there's so much more than just the externals of the situation. There's so much more behind the scenes. That's the Ratzon Hashem that Hanukkah comes to teach me. It's not just the externals. You can't approach Torah as external, you can't approach the world and life just externally. You have to believe that there's something a lot deeper. Something's a Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the whole world is Ratzon Hashem. And whatever the Ribbono Shel Olam wants is for the good, ultimately. And therefore, even if right now I'm crying because my legs are broken, but I have to have emunah that the Ribbono Shel Olam broke my legs for a reason. And had he not broken my legs, it would have been worse. That's what a person has to at least understand. To do this, you need the last point that I want to bring out. It also has to do with Hanukkah. To do this, Hanukkah, the Rambam says, benefited Klal Yisrael with an extra 200 years of Malchus Yisrael before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It brought back Malchus to Klal Yisrael. Now what is Malchus? Malchus is not ruling over other people. Malchus is being able to rule over yourself. There's a Medrash. The Medrash says that Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, and Bikshu HaTalmidim Lenamni, and the Talmidim started to go to sleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And he wanted to wake them up. So he said, Marasa Esther, Shemolchal Ne'avi Esther V'sheva Medinos. What did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 Medinos? Tovo Esther, Basbita Shalsara, Shechoysa Ne'avi Esther V'sheva Shonim, V'timlochal Ne'avi Esther V'sheva Medinos. They all woke up. What in the world is there a kesher between the 127 Shanim of Sarah and the 127 Medinos of Esther, except for the number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. Perhaps what Rabbi Akiva wanted to tell him is the following. Esther, her whole life, aspired to be like Sarah. What does that mean? It doesn't say Sarah Inenu lived 127 years. It says, Shnei Chayi Sarah Kulam Shavim Latova. All of Sarah's 127 years were equally for the good. Now, on the surface, that can't be. We know that Sarah's neighbor's life was not equally for the good. She had years of tsaris, years where she wanted, and years where she had. She had days she was dragged to Paro, dragged to Avimelech. You can't tell me those were as good, equally as good, as the day she celebrated the bris of her son. Impossible. So what does it mean? It doesn't say kulam shavim bitov. It says, Kulam Shavim Litov. They all were equally used for the good. That's Malchus. The Kuzri, the Melech HaKuzarim, asked the Chacham, was teaching him, describe for me a tzaddik. So he says, a tzaddik is a person who provides for all of his subjects what they need, so when he needs to call upon them to serve him, they're all there ready to serve him. So the Melech said, I think you misunderstood me. You're describing a Melech. I'm asking about a tzaddik. He said, that's what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person who provides for all his emotions, all of his abilities, capabilities, and talents, and provides for each one what it needs, so when he needs to call upon them to use them in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, they're there to be used. That's the ultimate melech. A melech is not somebody who rules other people. Shurei Das says, the last czar of Russia was so afraid of being assassinated, which in the end he was, he never slept more than 15 minutes in the same room at night. He had his guards move him from room to room every 15 minutes so his assassins wouldn't know where he is. That's a melech. He ruled over millions of people, but he couldn't rule over anybody. He was an eved. A melech is a person who knows how to rule over himself, who knows how to control everything about life. You can't control the situations that come your way. That's all the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what can you control? How you deal with it, how you approach it, how you relate to it. That's within our power. What situations come our way, and there's all different kinds of situations in this world. And if you look at them only in the external, then they're depressing and they're debilitating. But if you understand that there's something beyond that, there's something within it, there's a Ratzon Hashem behind all of this. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is controlling the world, and he's bringing everything for the best for everybody, ultimately, eternally. And I have to deal with those things in the way that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me the power to deal with it. I'm a melech. That's malchus. Sorry Mainu did not have an easy life, not at all. And yet she took and made every moment for the good. That's unbelievable malchus. Esther Amalka didn't have an easy life. She was taken from her husband. She had to live with a goy. She was brought up amongst goyim her whole life. She had a child who thought he was a goy. Was brought up as a goy. A big nachas that she had. Koresh, or her child was a Persian king. Big deal. Right? Imagine that Esther had a miserable life, but she didn't. Ma rosa Esther, what gave Esther the power to rule over 127 Medinos and make the best of the miserable life that Rabban Shem gave her? Because she aspired to be like Sarah, who made every second of her life kulam shavim batova. And Rabbi Kiva told his Talmidim, I know it's hard to stay up when you hear a shir. No, it's hard to stay up. It's difficult. It's not as difficult as Esther had. It's not as difficult as Sarah has. And if you want to be in control, you can. If you don't, if you want to be an Eved, and you want to fall prey to your sleepiness, then fall asleep. But you can be a Sarah, you can be an Esther, and you can take even the more difficult times in life and turn them into things that are positive, into things that you understand, even though thy legs are being broken. But I understand that Rabban Shem is doing it for a purpose, and ultimately, it's going to make me better. Ultimately, this is what's good for me in the eternal view of things. I just want to end with a medrash. Medrash says, "Hadudoyim nosnu reyach ve'al psochenu kol negodim chadoshim gam yishonim." It's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Hadudoyim nosnu reyach zeruvein shehitzelas Yosef ve'al psochenu kol negodim zen ner Chanukah. What's the kesher between hadudoyim nosnu reyach? First of all, Hadudoyim Nosnu Reyach, why is that Reuven who saved Yosef? That's Reuven who brought the Dudoyim to his mother in last week's Seder. Reuven who saved Yosef in Parshas Vayeshev has nothing to do with the Dudoyim. And what does that have to do with Ner Chanukah? I'm thinking the idea is the following. Reuven brought Dudoyim to his mother. It's interesting, Chazal say, the Ramban brings it down, that these Dudoyim were a fertility drug. Rachel wanted children, And Leah stopped having children. So Reuven found these dudoyim, I think they're called mandrakes, and the root of them is known to have a power of fertility. So he brought it for his mother. But in the end, his mother didn't get it. She traded it with Rachel. And in the end, Rachel had a child because of that. What did Reuven learn from that? You have to make your ishtadlus. It doesn't necessarily work out the way you think it's going to work out. The Rabban Shem runs the world. I took those dudoyim, I meant it for my mother. The Rabban Shem had other plans. He meant it for Rachel. So somehow it got into Rachel's hands. So I see that I'm not in the control of the world. Elamai, the Rabban Shem is. And the Ratzon of the Rabban Shem, if I can understand, there's an inner Ratzon, and I'm not in control, then I can have bitachon that the Rabban Shem is doing it, he has a good reason. That led Reuven to try and save Yosef. Why? Because Reuven could have said, look, everybody's against me. Everybody disagrees with me. Everybody thinks that this Yosef deserves to be killed, and at best we should sell him as a slave. Right? And I'm one against all of them. What's going to help? But he learned from the Dudoyim, you have to make your hishtadlus. You have to do what you have to do. You have to daven what you have to daven for, and you have to ask the Rabban Shlom and do everything you can, every kind of hishtadlus that you can do for what you think is what's good. But don't think that you run the world. But something's going to come from it. And that's why Reuven tried to save Yosef. In the end, he didn't. But he saved himself in the end. Because through everything that he was able to do, it made that Yosef should end up in Mitzrayim, and then he should be able to feed them during the Rav. So it didn't work out exactly as he thought. But he learned already from the Dudoyim, things don't necessarily work out as you think. But the Rabban Shem is running the world. There's something inside, besides the externals. And have enough faith, and that's what Ner Chanukah. The Chashmonaim could have said the same thing. There's no way humanly possible that we can be victorious. But that's not the Iker. We're not the ones who control the world. We just have to make our decision and do our Hishtadlus. And if we do it, the Rabban Shem will make something work out. If it doesn't work out this time, it'll work out for Klal Yisrael later on. It'll work out for somebody else. But that's how Ratzon Hashem is activated, by us doing the external, making the decisions, making our hishtadlus, And after that, the Rabbanu Shalom is the one who runs the world. So that's Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach, and that's Ner Chanukah. And yes, Hashem, we understand all these three things. Firstly, that in order to appreciate a Yeshua, you have to appreciate the Tzorah. And secondly, what exactly Chanukah is all about, that you have to understand the inner workings of things, not only the externals. And then it's possible even to not be happy and not give thanks to the Rabbanu Shalom in the midst of the Tzorah. That's almost humanly impossible. But at least to understand that the Tzorah is for a purpose. It's not for no purpose. There's a Rabbanu Shalom behind it, and even though I can't understand it and it hurts, and you have a right to cry about it, and to beg the Rabbanu Shalom to change the matzah, but at least you understand that the Rabbanu Shalom is behind it. It's not just something that's a mikra. Then that gives a certain amount of comfort, that it's not all in vain. If a person's suffering, they're suffering for a reason, and ultimately, in the eternal view of things, that pain is for their best end. Yes, Hashem, we understand all three of these things, that Chanukah can be a very exhilarating time, and in the schus, the nisim that happened by Yom Mohaim, Chanukah is a time for nisim and yeshuas. And I'll tell you a secret, as long as you don't let go out of this room, tonight's my birthday. Why am I telling you that? I don't expect a cake or even a... But it's brought down in Sfarim that one person on his birthday has a koach to give brachas. So here, aside from the regular birchas hedyet, right, you get a birthday, and I had a lot of birthdays already before, so it must have a lot of koach from the koach ha-hikstablus of all these birthdays, and Yirtz Hashem, there'll be more too, but... So in Yirtz Hashem, we should all see, each and every one of them, the Yeshua that they need in the right time, in the right way, and the Chanukah should be, together with this bracha, the time that all these brachas are chal on all of us, the Yeshua, and the Nechamos, and Heir of Yamin.